In World War II, people did horrible things, especially to the Jews. Many of those who were involved weren't Nazis. They just followed orders blindly, orders that led to them torturing and killing others. And especially the murder of the Jews, the murder of two-thirds of the Jewish population, around 6 million people dying because of people following orders or standing aside, caught people's attention. People were shocked at it, absolutely shocked, so shocked at how following others could lead people into doing horrendous things, that some of them created a new science out of it, the science of sin. In fact, the initial scientists were Jews. And the results of their experiments, of how badly people would behave, were a shock to the scientists and most of the rest of the world. They couldn't believe how awfully people could be persuaded to behave by simply receiving commands that many of the subjects of the experiment could be talked into torturing people to death. Yet, there's a much more reliable source for answers on sin than any scientific experiment. Jewish scientists could have turned to their own scriptures because they witness and detail human sin. In fact, in both the Old Testament, the Jewish scriptures, and the New Testament, it's really clear about human sin. While the Bible's not written as a scientific textbook, because it's about man's relationship with God, telling people how to know God. A key component of this is knowing about our sin. So the Bible does explain human sin in great detail. It goes into it throughout the Bible because it is our sin that gets in the way of us knowing God. And all that these scientific experiments did was simply confirm what the Bible said about sin. Oh, and give some good sermon examples. And as we come to Jesus going to the cross, we see human sin on display, people turning from God to their own way and behaving atrociously. And the people who are behaving atrociously are not just the leaders of the Jews, the chief priests and the teachers of the law that we expect it from, because we've seen it in previous weeks how badly that they've behaved, but also the common people who previously had been so supportive of Jesus. They followed their leaders and joined in the atrocious behavior. At the start of the passage, Jesus has been arrested by the leaders of the Jews. He's been put before the council of the leaders of the people. It's meant as a show trial. They just want to declare him guilty. They ask him if he's the Messiah. And he simply says that they won't actually listen to him, won't answer his questions, but that he will be sitting at the right hand of God. It's a common theme that when the Pharisees question him, Jesus raises the stakes, and he does it again. He says he'll be seated at God's right hand as the Son of Man. He's referring to Daniel 7 and Psalm 110. Daniel 7, the Son of God, is Son of Man is seated at God's right hand. Psalm 110, the Messiah is placed there. Both passages looking forward to Jesus' coming. And it's clear that if what Jesus says is true, he will be judge over the leaders, the same leaders who want to kill him. So they then go on to ask him if he's the Son of God, as the messianic figure is portrayed in Psalm 2. When Jesus replies, Jesus says, "You finally get it." Precisely that is the case. It being a kangaroo court, with, as Jesus says, no intention of listening to him, they take his reply as all they need. But they can't execute him. Only the Roman authorities could approve that, not the Jewish rulers. So they have to take him to the Roman authorities, to Pilate. However, a religious dispute is not grounds for the death penalty. If they went with that, they'd risk Pilate just dismissing it, as Gallio did with Paul. So they create charges. If we look at chapter 23, verse 2, it reads, "We have found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Christ a king." So they claim Jesus opposes paying taxes to Caesar. It's a straight lie. Jesus said to give to Caesar what's Caesar's. Then they claim Jesus is subverting the Jewish nation, when what they really mean is Jesus is showing them up. And they try and set him up against Caesar using the claims of him being the Messiah. The people who supposedly can't wait for a Messiah, who are there to instruct people in the Old Testament law, decide to lie to get Jesus killed. They blatantly ignore and break the Old Testament law to get Jesus killed. The New Zealand health minister this week was caught taking his family to the beach, blatantly in breach of regulations that he's been behind drafting and bringing in. He was a clear hypocrite, ignoring his own legislation. Rather than leading people in following it, he deliberately broke it. The Ten Commandments, as the leaders and teachers of the law well knew, includes, "You shall not give false testimony." And to get Jesus killed, that is precisely what they were doing. Breaking the law, disobeying God, because their authority was threatened. Because Jesus was showing them up. And to their charges, Pilate asks Jesus if he is a king. And when he says that it's as Pilate has said, Pilate sees no grounds for the charges. Jesus' idea of kingship is not, obviously not, a human one of political king, of bringing in false service and leading armies against the invaders. It's one of leading into relationship with God, which is why the Jewish leaders hate him and have accused him of insurrection. So Pilate declares him innocent. However, the Jewish leaders insist. Learning that Jesus is a Galilean, Pilate sent him to Herod, passing the buck. Herod's long wanted to meet Jesus and finally gets the chance to meet him and mock him. But when Jesus gives no answers to Herod's questions, Herod finds no grounds for the charges and sends Jesus back to Pilate. So Pilate calls the people together to declare Jesus innocent and release him. And it's not just Pilate and Herod that declare Jesus innocent. Later, the thief on the cross declares Jesus has done nothing wrong. And the centurion declares him a righteous man. Jesus being innocent of sin is key. Now, many have gone to prison for charges they have not committed. In fact, in one case I noticed preparing for this, a man was jailed 25 years for rape, served all of it, would have been let out earlier if he had admitted to it. But he refused to admit his guilt. And then, after he was released, DNA tests proved his innocence. But Jesus is declared innocent and righteous at the time. He's righteous before God. Now, Pilate's idea of declaring Jesus innocent, as he says to the leaders and the people, is to beat the person so they won't cause trouble later, before releasing them. That way, he can at least appease them a bit, while not killing this so-called king who does not deserve to die. Hardly what we'd call justice. But that was the Romans' way. But it's not acceptable for the Jewish leaders. They call for Jesus' head. They instead say to release a murderer, someone in prison for fighting against the Romans, showing the leaders have no interest in stopping the Romans being overthrown, no interest in stopping insurrection, rebellion. As they told Pilate, they're doing it for their own interests. But what's shocking at this stage is it's not just the leaders who are calling for Jesus to be killed. Ordinary people join in. The people who Pilate probably asked there to make sure Jesus was released, who had flocked to Jesus' teaching, turn against him, preferring to have Pilate release a murderer ahead of Jesus. And this isn't a tentative plea from them. They're shouting in verse 21, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate emphasizes his innocence for a third time in verse 22, saying, "Why, what crime has this man committed? I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Therefore, I will have him punished and then release him." But the crowd continued shouting for his death. So Pilate, previously been rebuked by the emperor for upsetting the Jews, gave way. Now, the leader's behavior is shocking, but what do we think of the people's behavior? The story of a girl who was bullied at school by a gang. She was led into a house by so-called friends and was raped by members of the gang. Almost 2 years later, she committed suicide. Very, very sadly. The mother was distraught. One of the female members of the gang, who had been a much closer friend before they changed school, and she was sucked into the gang, tried on Facebook to say sorry. The mother's response was that they all have blood on their hands. And the same is true in Luke of the people. All have blood on their hands. It's obvious. They elect for Jesus to die. They are like the tenants of the vineyard in the parable Jesus told who elect to kill the son. They choose for him to die, for their Messiah to die. No one's innocent other than Jesus. No one else is innocent. And yet, if we're honest, we're not innocent either. We can make the same statement of us. Like them, none of us can claim to serve God wholeheartedly all the time. If we say we're unlike the people, that we'd have behaved righteously, we have to remember many of the people in the who were in that crowd would have said the same. They wouldn't have believed what they could, what they'd do. Many in World War II were shocked at their own behavior. Today, we fall short. And we don't like to accept how bad our own behavior is. The behavior that means that we need Jesus to die for us. The summary of what the people cause is in verse 25. If you look at it, it reads, he released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, the one they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will. Jesus died while innocent. And a murderer was freed in his place for no reason. The injustice stands out. No one is innocent except the one being killed. No one. Yet, why should the Son of God submit to these indignities? Why should he die? After warning the people again of the terrible things that will happen to Jerusalem when God's wrath for the death of his son falls, and how terrible that will be. Then, while the soldiers are casting lots for his clothes, as we read of in the Old Testament reading, as well as the New, in verse 34, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Jesus asks for mercy for the people. And that's what Jesus' death is about. While crucifixion was the most painful form of death in the Roman world, used as a deterrent for criminals, Jesus wants mercy for the people who sent him there. Jesus wants for God to grant forgiveness to the people. Now, Pilate, to mock the Jews, had put up a notice saying, this is the King of the Jews. He spoke truer than he realized. Jesus, as the King of the Jews, was prepared to die. To die for his people, to die a horrendous death for his people. To bring mercy, to bring forgiveness. The people in verse 35 said, he saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one. The soldiers said, while mocking him, in verse 37, if you're the king of the Jews, save yourself. One of the thieves said in verse 39, aren't you the Christ? Save yourself. The issue was, Jesus could either save himself or save others. He could either save himself, as earthly kings tended to do, or he could die in our place for our sin to offer mercy, to take God's wrath on himself as our head, as our king. Luke's gospel has emphasized that Jesus came for sinners, to save sinners, and it continues to do so here. Just as Jesus died in Barabbas' place, a murderer's place, so he died for us in our place to take God's wrath on himself. He dies so that the people of God might receive God's mercy and forgiveness, so that we might receive God's mercy and forgiveness. And the horror of this, the horror of the Son of Man dying, is shown in the land being darkened, in the sun stopping shining. There's no light because the Messiah, the one who came to bring the light of God into the world, who came to bring the light of God to us, was killed. And it's in the horror of Jesus suffering and dying, despite being innocent and righteous, that we receive God's mercy. Yet Jesus' death asks how we'll respond. Are we prepared to accept him as our king, accept mercy from God that we do not deserve, and live accordingly? Verse 46 reads, Jesus called out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. When he had said this, he breathed his last. Jesus died, trusting God to look after him and commit his spirit into God's hands. Out of this, he brings mercy to us that we do not deserve. Are we prepared to live trusting him, committing our lives to him? Father, thank you that you grant us mercy through Jesus, through your Son dying for us. Help us to live in gratitude, committing our lives to following him and living for him. Jesus' name. Amen.